This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. This is Front Row on The Bigger Picture, and I'm Sharmila Ganesan. We're into the last few days of the year, which seems like a good time to look back at 2018 and talk about what's been happening in the Malaysian arts over the last 1 year. We'll be focusing on different areas of the arts over the next few days. And today, we'll be talking about what the visual arts have been like. Joining me are Daryl Goh, who is the arts and culture editor over at The Star, and artist Ruby Subramaniam, who you might remember from our arts review segment, Everyone's a Critic. How are you guys doing today?
Good.
Very good. Glad to be here.
So, if you guys had to sum up the visual arts in 2018, in one word, what would that word be?
Wow. I would say digital.
Mm-hmm. I would say we have been a very quiet one for the local arts.
One word, La Daryl. Okay. Quiet. Yeah. Maybe you can explain why you say digital, Ruby.
Simply because I think maybe it was quiet, you know. So I think I reclined a bit and, like, compared to the previous years, stopped going to the exhibitions as much. So I was keeping in touch with everything that was happening online. So I guess that's also where I'm coming from today. So I just wanted to see what different artists doing online and, in, you know, what's the different feedback like on the digital space.
And why would you say it was quiet, Daryl?
Oh, it was a very strange year because, I mean, most of our, the bigger galleries in Kuala Lumpur were basically concentrating on bringing the artists abroad. So, I mean, there's lots of time spent going to the art fairs in Singapore and Hong Kong and whatnot, and even some shows in New York and all that. So, we had to rely on the younger artists and the newer galleries to bring up. And I would say there are stirrings, so 2019 would be something I would look forward to, but 2018 has been that kind of year.
Mm. Is there some reason why you think, I think the general thought would have been with the elections and the new government and everything that we would have seen a lot of activity?
Well, if I look at it from the digital space, I was actually quite surprised because I didn't really see, besides the already political artists, commenting or even drawing anything about what was going on. So, you know, maybe even simple drawings and stuff like that. I think perhaps there was fear, like no one was really sure what was going to happen. So maybe they were scared to express their opinions and, you know, things can go viral very easily. So I guess maybe that fear stopped some people from expressing certain things. Still, I wish there was a bit more exploration on different kind of topics, right? Like not just, 5 years in the scene, and I think year after year, okay, if we talk about saving the rainforest, we're still at the top level conversation. No one has really dug in deep or gone out there, done a bit more research and then explored the topic a bit further. So I really want to have conversations that are deeper than the first layer of the topic, which I think I'm not seeing in gallery spaces, nor in the digital space, actually.
I mean, that's what I have to agree with Ruby talking about. I mean, not going beyond the first layer or getting conversations going in galleries. I mean, galleries are also very strapped at this moment in time. It's that they need to have shows that take all commercial galleries, and the art scene has not been at its most healthiest at all for maybe a year and a half or something like that. It's not boom times where people just go in and just buy art. Mm. I've not even seen that many affordable art fairs. I mean, we have this flea market type, the Hinbas Depot type.
I think Urbanscapes also had a fairly sort of affordable arts, some works that were being sold at fairly affordable prices. But yeah, generally, most galleries are trying to hit the higher end market, right?
Some of them, when they start off, I mean, it's kind of like if you were a collector, would you... it's kind of prohibitive for a young collector. If you have deep pockets, then wouldn't be a problem, actually.
What were some of the best shows or exhibitions that you saw in the last year?
I would say, if you have to look at the galleries themselves, I would go for Pago Pago by Latif Mohideen, would have been a big surprise, actually. It showed in Paris in February, right? And it came over to Malaysia in November or something like that? Or was it
I think it came over earlier this year and then it ran until...
Yeah, it's still running actually.
Yeah, it's still running.
Yeah, so don't miss it.
At Ilham Gallery.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's the fact that we just never get to see the whole picture of Latif Mohiuddin in Malaysia. I mean, most of these artworks, basically, this show originated from Singapore, the National Gallery of Singapore. And if you were interested in his early career, his explorations of the Southeast Asian narrative, and just a young man, basically coming back from Europe, a Malaysian who went out to study there. And his story is, that's actually the first part of Latif Mohiuddin's story. So if you want to get to know his art, this will be the exhibition.
Sort of like the beginnings of a Malaysian icon, right?
He went on to greater things, though.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's the one exhibition I've missed out on and I've been wanting to go forever. But the other exhibition that I really thought was interesting was the one before Pago Pago in Ilham Gallery.
Patani Semasa.
Yes.
The one from Thailand, is it?
Yeah. So I had, a very eye-opening experience over for... in that show, simply because, first of all, it was talking about kind of war issues that's happening close to Malaysia, and yet no one seems to know about it. And the artists are so mature, right? And the kind of works they created, and you look at the history of it, it's only 15 years. So the curator did a very good job in putting together naive artists and very serious artists and big works and some works that, you know, you go in as a visitor and you're like, it's too abstract, I'm not sure what it means. But a nice collection of everything like that that gives a different taste. So while it's a very heavy subject matter, it was done in a very a beautiful way that captured what, you know, someone in that area must have felt like. So
This was, I think, an exhibition that was brought over from the Mayam Gallery in Chiang Mai,
yes,
right?
Definitely. Yeah. And one good thing was the exhibition, which I talked to the curator, was that there's 28 artists for this show and 11 female artists. I mean, for me, that's I like that kind of balance. It's very difficult to get that kind of balance in a Malaysian show in terms of representation. Mm-hmm, I mean, Ruby, what do you think of that?
Yeah, well, being a female artist, I think I often see...
I don't like that word, female artist. Actually. It's all artists. Everyone's an artist.
Yeah, but unfortunately, you have that label on you, whether you like it or not,
and
right?
You're expected to represent it whether you like
exactly.
it or not.
Exactly.
Yeah.
For the last few years, every time I see a female-only show or like, you know, and it's like, hey, 100 female artists, but what are they really trying to say with the show, right? Like, is there a deeper conversation going on about what this artist face. So, yeah, I think representation when it comes to shows, I've been to stuff in like Petronas Art Gallery as well, and very often you find, you know, maybe two artists amongst, you know, like 10 or 12 artists. And why is that still happening? Really not sure.
It's actually happened this year also at the Bank Negara Malaysia Museum and Art Gallery show, the Cerny Cetak.
The printmaking
show.
Yeah.
I mean, there were 33 artists. I mean, I walked around the whole gallery looking at the history of printmaking, and I just realized that's only like maybe two female artists in that show. But rest assured, it was a good show, but I just wish they had more representation also.
And what about smaller shows? Because Ilham and Bank Negara, they're sort of established spaces. Were there smaller shows that caught your attention?
No, this year I was basically looking out for shows that were not... I mean, I go around all the galleries, all the commercial galleries, looking for any sort of a different sort of... art that's been created and all that. But I did find a show at the Ruang Gallery in, I think a few months ago. It was called the Sensory Photography Show. Mm-hmm. It's for the visually impaired, photography show for the visually impaired and blind. Seven photographers were trained to take photographs and all that. So it was quite an eye-opening show, and they had things like tactile photography and with audio. It was a small show, but it's well done. So I mean, I would like to see more of these sort of shows in coming months.
I would agree. I think that I, again, didn't manage to go for the show itself, but just how they were mobilizing people that you think didn't have access to use that particular medium, right? So that is beautiful, and that's what art is meant to do as well. Like, every time you ask what's the point, that is the point, right? When you think you can't express it in a certain way, and finally you find ways to do it. So I heard some backstories on that exhibition.
Really amazing, actually.
Yeah.
We actually had them on the show, so you guys can check out the podcast if you're interested.
Yes.
But yes, it's actually quite amazing, and I think what people don't realize is it is visually impaired people taking photographs,
mm-hmm.
And this ranges from people who have partial vision all the way to, I think, 100% visual impairment.
Yeah.
And I just found how different the photos were,
mm-hmm.
Because of their perspective,
yeah.
I wouldn't have thought that's what I would get from that exhibition.
There was one photographer who was basically going blind, right? He basically, the process was he just went and just took as his eyesight was deteriorating.
So it's interesting that you mentioned that, Daryl, because to me that kind of links to what Ruby was saying earlier about the digital space and how it opens up this idea of art to people who don't even call themselves artists,
yeah.
and who I think the traditional sort of art scene doesn't consider to be artists,
mm-hmm.
but now a lot of them are putting out work that fits in into the art space as well.
Yeah.
Is this something that has been happening more this year?
I think I've been following, I got involved in the art scene only because of the digital space. So my loyalty is in the digital space first, because there's no boundaries, right? There's no filters of who you can connect, who is in the higher level, and, you know, who you can access and stuff like that. If you're, you know, if people like your work gets shared, and that is about it to it. So I think what was interesting for me this year in the digital space is I like how different artists use the crowdfunding method. And when you say there's no money in the art scene, these guys took everything, took control back into their own hands and used whatever platforms they had and used it very smartly, right? And it's not like setting up and running a crowdfunding campaign, it's not an easy thing. You've got to actually really think it out and strategize how you're going to do it. So I think a lot of these artists have really thought their product through, thought how they're going to put their work out, and then ran with it, right? So Ramina, she's 23 years old. She's a comic artist, and she came up with this campaign for her comic book, The Carpet Merchant of Constantinia. And I love it. And her book is rather expensive, I would say, for a Malaysian market. The hardcover copy goes for slightly more than 100 ringgit, if I'm not wrong. And she fully funded her campaign, right? So that was a smart way of doing it, and at such a young age as well. So I think artists are moving towards, you know, stuff like that. And a very different example would be another artist, Marty Woods. And he is a colouring book artist. Now, he put up his stuff in Amazon and in Etsy, and really just using social media as a great platform to get, you know, people looking at his work. So again, then his market is very international.
Mm.
How much he engages with the local crowd is more, I think, in the public scenes where he gives talks and stuff like that. Then on the other side, you have someone like Fahmi Reza, who's very political. And it took him, 18 hours to crowdfund 30,000 ringgit.
Right, yes.
Right? And it was something really simple, T-shirts and badges and stuff like that. Mm. But you see when the message is important and you have the people supporting you, it gets done. So I think moving forward, maybe, you know, digital is a much more viable option than, you know, gallery representation. I don't know.
Yeah, Ruby, that's a hot button. I would say, when we talk to a lot of artists, I mean, there seems to be like really they're moving around in the same circles, and they get frustrated. And that whole Shafiq Nordin show recently was him essentially just voicing out his how the artists are being like cornered by collectors, and I mean there's just a lot of frustration. They just cannot go forward in what they want to do and all that. But if you look at it, right, there is in the whole culture of the Malaysian arts right now, you are stuck in that whole infrastructure of a gallery and all that. But if there was a sense of breaking out and going into a broader scope, like it might be a very small thing, but I was very interested in what Sharon Chin and Zedek Siu did this year.
The Creatures of Near Kingdoms.
Her artwork, I mean, I knew about it through her local fauna exhibition a few years ago. And these works were also shown at the printmaking exhibition at the Bank Negara show. And then these works were also put to a narrative by Zedek Siu, and it was published by
Marplay Comics.
Map. Okay.
People think it's Maple, but it's actually Marplay. Yes, I was corrected by the founder.
Okay. So that's something really something to look forward to. If you have this kind of where, because the art scene does not really cross over. Sadly, I mean, I find it very strange. It doesn't cross over into music. It doesn't cross over into film.
But like the thing is also that project took 5 years to make. Okay. Right? Very well thought of. But it takes that many years for you to produce something that is good. And so if you are expecting artists to create work like that, where are they getting the funding from, right? It's work that happens in the background while you're doing commission work, while you're doing smaller prints to make money. That's why it's taking so long. So
and it's ironic that passion projects get you the amount of exposure that is unimaginable.
Well, on that note, we do need to take a break. But when we come back, we'll speak more about the good, the bad, the boring and the exciting of visual arts in 2018 in Malaysia. I'm speaking with arts and culture editor Daryl Goh and artist Ruby Subramaniam. We'll be back after a short break. You're listening to Front Row on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Welcome back. This is Front Row on The Bigger Picture and I'm Sharmila Ganesan. It's nearing the end of the year and we're doing a wrap-up of what the arts have been like over the past year. Today we're talking about the visual arts and I have with me Daryl Goh, culture editor at The Star, and artist Ruby Subramaniam. So before the break, we were talking a little bit about some fairly offbeat kind of works that have crossed over both from the digital space into, I suppose, the traditional art scene and vice versa. Daryl, you talked about Sharon Chin and Zedek's book, which is essentially a sort of combination of art and literature. As someone who has been sort of covering and operating in the art space for a few years now, I guess a big question would that especially like more traditional art lovers would say is, could you consider these art? Like, does that do things like viral, artwork online, comic books? Can they actually be considered as part of the Malaysian visual arts output?
I mean, if you're talking about viral, you'll be talking like something from Fahmi Reza. And I mean, that has the political core to it, the messages there. And it's his message, it's his art, and it's got a whole Malaysian narrative to it. And I mean, people can relate to it. They can feel his passion, his
message.
Yeah. And it's legitimate for me. I mean, I would like to actually see a Fahmi Reza exhibition being done next year.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he did have one a few years ago, but it was a different government. So, yeah.
I kind of felt that way about the Punk Rock Sulap exhibition, which they finally managed to bring over to Semenanjung.
Mm-hmm.
A-plus works of art, right?
Yes.
For me, it was very significant. And Daryl, I think the fact that you guys carried the so-called banned artwork on the cover of Star 2, I think that was very exciting for me, because at one point, that was the work that was taken down from the Balai Seni exhibition.
It was a very dark time, I guess, for them. I mean, for the art scene, I mean, there was whole big reaction and about censorship again, and I mean the punk rock guys just took it. I mean just took it and just waited, and somehow after the elections, things definitely changed. But I have to say that it was a slew of very terrible exhibitions on the backlash of the May 9.
Yeah, so terrible, really.
Bad art. There was a lot of it was very cheap shots.
Mm.
Lots of smaller galleries were doing all these terrible exhibitions. But I think when it came to the punk rock, you know, they had consistency. They were actually, everything was in their art, the whole community narrative. And that next like the Ula Lari Lurus artworks,
which was directly responding to BN's campaigning tactics and stuff like
one
that.
One was done in 2014, one was done in just after the elections. You can look at both those pieces and piece things together.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Ruby, what about you? Did you, I know both of us, we did two exhibitions which actually directly yep. responded to the elections.
Yeah.
One was Teh Tarik with the Flag by yes. Wailing Gallery. Mm-hmm. One was Diantari Tudan Ini.
Yes.
And both were at Balai Seni Negara.
Yep.
What did you feel about these artists and these works that responded to May 9th?
I think with the Antara Itu dan Ini, it perhaps was, we need to do an exhibition about this, and kind of it came out in that sense. I much preferred the Antara Itu dan Ini because I think the exhibition made me slightly uncomfortable, which I like, which means it made me think about certain things and all that. So I feel that had a very personal impact in me. But overall, I think, again, I felt a lot of artists were also in a state of confusion while creating all these works, because they are probably trying to be like, okay, all this while our identity has been like, you're told you can't create art like this or you're going to get into trouble, right? So suddenly there's a little bit of room to like, hey, you know, you can actually say what you want to say. So then there's hesitation. Do I say it? Will I get into trouble if I say it? Who's going to back me up if I get into trouble? And, you know, maybe some artists don't have that backup or that sense of assurance that, you know, okay, we will take care of you, you know, if it gets banned. So I think the artists are probably still finding their voice in this new Malaysia. And is the new government going to be okay with having open voices?
I suppose it also doesn't help, right? Like fairly soon after the elections at the Georgetown Festival,
yes.
we had that fiasco with the LGBT activist portraits being taken down. And I think that kind of pulled some of the artists back from this excitement of yes. that it may not necessarily be all that easy. Do you think that's what it is, that there's some hesitation and also people are still coming to terms with what has happened?
The reality is, I mean it looked like as if it was basically wide open roads and, you know, blue skies, you can do whatever you want, but there seems to be barriers in parts of the government, the new one. Mm-hmm. So where are we going to find that common space where you could actually have a liberating art show that just says it as it is?
And do you think perhaps that is happening in the digital space?
See, I think that's why the digital space is very interesting, because from the outside, it may look like the artist does not have this stress, right? But it is actually quite the contrary, because I think once you're so public with your work, people expect you to have a certain pattern or a certain way of producing work. And then when you go, you know, you try to be a bit more experimental, like if you're a fine artist and you suddenly start doing, you know, very doodle kind of works, and they're like, what happened to you? Are you now less serious, you know? And this artist, Mona, she was talking to me how she started going to simpler works because she just wanted to produce, but she was getting feedback that, you know, are you becoming a less serious artist now? So, you know, that again boils back to, do you consider certain art forms less serious than the other? You know, and again, looking back into the digital space, there's a huge amount of interest in people looking for doodle art, right? And for me, you know, in the past few years, everyone has always said, you know, it's very simplistic, it's something for fun, you know, it's a very mindless form of art. But I've seen some really interesting works created in the Doodle Malaysia space. Now there's 12,000 members over there. And when something happens in Malaysia, people actually go to this space and draw something out, and it's really fun and cute. And sometimes, you know, you actually think it doesn't take much time to do something like that, but it creates a conversation, and, you know, people get involved, and, you know, someone is like maybe unhappy about it, or someone's like, this is exactly what I feel, you know? So there's a sense of relevance created in that space.
I mean, when you're talking about all these things, I feel what you're, I mean, where you're getting at. I mean, there's this sense that there's a disconnect between the wider community and the art scene. I mean, people don't have the urge to actually go to a Biennale, and, you know, they don't even know what it is. And it's always been top down, and I would say that the first Biennale, I mean, there was a lot of 45,000 people visited it and all that. That was earlier this year, it ended But you look at the whole Balai's 60th anniversary, right? What would be the shows that would have grabbed you? You know, it's like people, the common man on the street.
Right.
I mean, I would pick Antara Itu Dan Ini and Rupa Rupa Nia. That would be the shows that I would gravitate to. And but it was the Caravaggio show that the broader masses related to.
Right, and sometimes that tends to be an issue, right? That these big names from abroad,
pro show,
yeah, and they are the ones that grab the. I mean, if you have a limited amount of time, do you go to Caravaggio, or do you see a local artist whose name you may not know and you don't know whether they're going to like the work, and how does an audience decide, especially when a lot of work can be viewed as quite inaccessible, right?
So do you think like, I mean, Malaysia needs this Yayoi moment to actually have
Yayoi Kusama
so
moment,
much
yeah.
talk about the fact that it needs something to ignite the imagination of the masses. I mean, we're not talking about the art community. The art community will always be there. But how do you broaden it?
Mm.
It's too simplistic. Maybe we'll just have a Yayoi show.
But like, I mean, earlier you said how this year a lot of artists were sent overseas and doing exhibitions out there. So I think that's also another trend that I see. Apparently, if you do a show, you know, somewhere else besides Malaysia, suddenly you come back and you're like, you're approved. So do we not have our own approval system here? Mm. You know, where do you need to show your work here in Malaysia for people to say, wow, that was, good stuff and good show you've hit it. But it seems like, okay, you're in New York. Wow, great, you've made it, man. But like, there's, we're still seeking external approval in that sense, right?
I mean, let's not even talk about up-and-coming artists. Mm-hmm. Even a Latif Mohideen retrospective was brought to us via National Gallery of Singapore. And that's the first time most Malaysians have got to see so many of his early works in one place.
Yeah.
But it wasn't initiated by anyone here.
Mm-hmm.
So to me, I'm not sure whether... I can't put my finger on what the issue is. Is it that the local arts market is driven quite strongly by what sells and what can be sold?
Mm-hmm.
And so they are not focusing on these things that are not viewed as bringing in money?
I don't know. I did talk to Wailing Gallery when they brought in this Dadang Cristianto show.
I mean,
that's a very intense show about the... Dadang Cristianto is this Indonesian artist that's now living in Australia. So he had a show at Wailing called Missing. It's about the 1965 mass killings, the communist purge in Indonesia.
Mm-hmm.
That's the kind of show that you don't have in a commercial gallery. You know, that's almost like a museum type show.
Mm.
So, but it was an eye opener to a lot of. I mean, to have that sort of serious content, and it was a very dark show, but. No, I've not seen any of these kind of shows except for Petani Semasa at Ilham Gallery.
Yeah.
Those two shows kind of like had an impact on me this year.
And Ruby, I mean, I know you do quite a bit of research and study on things like audience engagement and all that.
Yeah.
What do you think an audience in Malaysia, Malaysian audience, is looking for?
Yeah, so I just... like ran a couple of stuff on Google Trends, right? So this is really to understand what the Malaysian crowd typically puts on the search bar and finds in relation to the art. So I found some interesting stuff. I just wanted to compare two perspectives from language point of view. So I searched for, I looked out for information who searched for art and who searched for the term seni, right? So of course, art has like almost 10 times more volume than the word seni, right? But of course, then again, you take into consideration art Harun falls into the art category, right? But so when you look into who are searching or what kind of stuff are they searching related to art, you get stuff like street art, doodle art, art and craft, Penang street art, pop art. So again,
this is very indicative, right, of what the general public would want to see.
Yeah. So I think that's where it's very tourism based. It's very stuff that you want to maybe take a picture of. It's very Instagrammable kind of art, right? Where else, if you look at the word seni, the top keyword that comes up is actually pasar seni and pendidikan seni and seni dan kebudayaan. And interestingly, when you look at location, art, you have Penang, Selangor, Melaka as the top three. Seni, you have Perak, KL and then Kelantan. So people who are searching for the word seni I think, actually have more in-depth. They are looking for more in-depth stuff because they are looking at seni dan kebudayaan, right? They're looking for more material in there. And the students who are studying visual arts, pendidikan seni, are really finding more material in the Malay language. So do they then have access to other article reviews?
Which may only be in English, right?
Yeah. That are about the international shows. So there's some, again, we're talking about the disconnect between the public and what's been given out there. Are these articles written in Malay, like these shows written in Malay, so that they have access to them? I'm not sure.
Yeah, I mean, do you see any new Facebook groups or social media groups coming out with, I mean, just young art critic out there?
Mm-hmm. Art critics, I think, is a whole other challenge, right? Yep. Do we even have enough of a... I mean, do we have writers who are groomed to become art critics? I mean, I think across print media, whether it's online, there's not a lot of space where people can specialize in art criticism and make a living.
It's a luxury now, actually.
Yes.
And also, I think, you know, you are the artist, you are the art critic, you are the organizer. So it's like you need to have, you know, more people who are in the critical writing or giving feedback that have experience in it and not just simply going by the books or what someone else has told 5 years ago and just parroting those same thoughts again.
What are some of the things that the both of you would like to see in the coming year?
I would like to see, more of those archival shows, actually. I mean, especially what happened after May 9th and the whole, I mean, the sort of art that was leading up to the years before. I mean, artists were suppressed. I mean, some sort of GE14 related, but, I mean, it goes beyond it. I mean, more, the tone would be some sort of a reconciliation or... And you can be angry also, fan. I mean, just across the board, all that kind of art, the Malaysia that was and the Malaysia that can be in a show that is no holds barred.
And you don't think this is something that has yet been done properly?
We've had pockets, but not a mass. I was like, even for the art expo, I mean, I was looking at Chan Fee-Ming's work. It's very political.
Yes.
At an art expo. So, I mean, that was something, which, you know, mainstream artists. So, you could, a blend of the upstarts and the established ones.
I really, you know, I wish perhaps more collaborations happen and artists cross over, you know. So, you expect if it's in a particular gallery or by a particular curator, they're familiar names. They are friends. They hang out together.
Yeah.
Kind of a thing, right? So, are we bringing in new voices into that space or are we, you know, combining them with younger artists and stuff like that? And I also kind of wish to see, you know, we're talking about the new Malaysia and stuff like that. What is new Malaysia, right? Like, we are all talking about it. And isn't it a great time for artists to be reflective of this time and this space and come up with their ambitions and their ideas of where this nation should head to? Then it will, I guess, truly show whether the fear has left us or not, right? And, you know, I guess that would be something interesting to see as well.
Well, thank you very much. I mean, I would love to see all of those things happen next year. But thank you for coming and sharing your thoughts. It was really interesting hearing what 2018 was like for both of you.
Thank you so much for having us.
I've been speaking to Daryl Goh, who is the Star's Arts and Culture Editor, and artist Ruby Subramaniam about the visual arts in Malaysia in 2018. Over the next few days, we'll be looking back at various aspects of the local arts. Do tune in tomorrow. We'll be talking about the music scene here in 2018 with BFM's very own music director, Ali Johan. If you missed any part of this interview or any previous Front Row segments, you can download the podcast on our BFM app. You've been listening to Front Row on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.